Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is my co-host, producer, and master of mayhem, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Good evening, and may mayhem be with you. That's the heart.
May.
If my last name was Mayhem, I would name my daughter May.
May Mayhem. I think that needs to be a character in the Muggerville universe.
That could be May Mayhem. Yes, so we have our first villain for the Muggerville universe. Like, you need villains in Muggerville.
That's the whole point of, yes.
It's kind of hard to have like a utility belt because someone's always mugging it off of you.
I was thinking a lot about the Muggerville universe this week, and I was thinking that... That Mr. I of the Muggerville universe doesn't really have a superpower. He just has a little bit above average IQ and an internet connection, which is a really rare thing in the Muggerville universe to be able to look something up on Google. So, like, if there's anything that needs a problem that needs to be solved, he's, you know, a super genius because he's got a smartphone and a job that doesn't involve mugging people. So I don't know if that origin story is going to stick, but I kicked it around in my brain for a while.
I like that because it gives him some purpose.
But secretly,
in a world without purpose,
right? Secretly, he's a lot smarter. He's actually a super genius. He just doesn't know it because
he's never been challenged.
Exactly, he's the smartest guy in the room.
But speaking of challenges,
speaking of Muggerville, we are beginning a new story arc coming off the heels of our 100th issue, which Cole and I came up with this story idea a while ago, this story arc idea a while ago, probably 6 months ago or so.
Oh, easily, possibly even longer. And I think at first, my first pass was like, oh, this would be a great issue.
It'd be another one of those where it's like, yeah, we could fill an issue with this. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is
an arc. And I love the fact that Andy will, the way he champions what he thinks should be an arc that I think is a single issue, is he says simply, this would make a great arc.
That's all you have to
and
do.
That's it. Then I'm left with that. And it stews and steeps and ferments and does other strange things. And the next thing I know, it's a damn arc. And not only is it an arc, but then I have named every issue of that arc.
Right. And you have a general concept for what we're going to do.
I'm like, damn you. Don't make me do thinking things.
I know how to work the room. All right. That's all I'm going to say. I know how to motivate people. So this arc is entitled Challenge of the Super Fails.
Exactly.
And the idea here is that...
Special tribute to the Super Friends, of course.
Of course, which in and of itself...
Their challenge.
Could be a super fail. The idea here is that we do a lot to, and I know that it doesn't seem like it, but when after you do 100 or so issues for a couple of years, if you go back and listen, we do a lot to champion the good comic books. When we talk about best comics I've ever read and recommended reading and having people on to talk about their favorite comic books and talk about concepts that are good, we spend a little bit of time talking about things that aren't good, things that fail, things
absolutely.
That... things are bad, but the thing, when you have an industry as rich and as tenured as the comic book industry is, and I was telling Cole before the show started, when you sow the field and the soil is so rich and can produce not only the great comic books that we love, but, it's one of those where if you have a broken clock, yeah, it's right twice a day. But the other 23 hours
catch up with
really
that.
Wrong. So 22 hours. There's only 24 hours in a day, Cole. I'm just
But even the hours that are right are so wrong.
Are so wrong. So we're gonna spend some issues of Hey Kids Comics discussing comic book failures, super fails, things that have fallen apart or never got started or horribly
are the
wrong.
Things that you wonder. Why was that ever something someone agreed to do in the first place?
Right. So that being said, tonight's issue is it Astonishing Fails?
It is Astonishing Fails. Yes.
I somehow got both the
we've
title.
We've already eaten up Fails to Astonish some while back, so I had to go with Astonishing Fails for this one, which actually works better.
Though we could call it Fails to Astonish, since we are doing a whole thing on what happens when comic books fail anyway. So
this is truly the point where you want Oliver Queen to come jump in and say, Marvel or DC, you have failed comics.
You have failed this industry.
That's right.
Did you happen to see, by the way, speaking of Arrow, did you happen to see where he was put on the spot at during the panel at San Diego Comic-Con?
I did not.
Some kid gets up. I say kid, I'm 37 now. Somebody gets up and says, asks him a question about the show. And we're talking about, what's his name? Steve Amell or whatever his name is. And then says, I want you to do, can you do the entire intro to the Arrow TV show? He has nothing front of him. You know, he's recorded it, once in his life once for posterity's sake.
Then
he does it in the voice. He misses one line and he has to look over, and I think it's either John Barrowman or Paul Blackstone has to prompt him on one little part, but he nails it almost word for word, timber for timber, beat
that
for beat.
Amazing.
And I'm like, this guy loves what he's doing, and I think that's awesome. But that's off topic.
That really is. Yeah.
It's both awesome and off topic. Yeah. So tonight we are going to
rescue this.
Tonight we're going to give you a little bit of an overview of what we're thinking about doing, and just kind of give you a little teaser, a little taste of what we feel are some of the big astonishing fails in the comic book industry.
And we might be hurting somebody, for which we do not apologize. I don't apologize.
No. Why would we apologize? If you have problems with what we consider failures, feel free to write us at, what's the email address, Cole?
At jcumail@yahoo.com and just put astonishing fails.
Right. Tell us why we were wrong.
Or
to consider
how dare you ungrateful bastard.
That's
whichever
right.
of those headers you prefer. That way we can weed it out from the one email we get a year.
And I want you to understand, as your host, as Cole and I are curators to what we do every week, when I talk about comic books that fail, I consider it almost the same way I consider movies and TV shows. I'm not a guy who likes who goes for half measures. All right, I don't like mediocre anything. Like anything that falls in the 3 to 7 range, I'm not a fan of. I like 7 to 10. I like the really really good stuff.
So a 3 to 7 could tip its way in if it makes it to 7.
Right, it could.
So technically, it's 3 to 6. Cause I'm not going to go with half measures here either, mister.
Thank you for correcting me right away. Cole, you
right
can email. You can email bite me at jcumail.org.tv. And I like my comics really bad, too. So I'm saying that these comics have failed. Keep in mind, I love bad comic books. I absolutely adore awful comic book ideas. Your Heroes Reborns. Your there's
Secret
one
Wars 2s.
What was that?
Your Secret Wars 2s.
Oh, I loved it. I can't help it. I can't help it. I loved it. Your
what was the more lovable, Secret Wars 2 or the Secret Wars 2's crossovers?
Oh, okay. So we'll go right for it.
Yeah.
We're in now. I don't know. It might have been his fro. I remember Secret Wars 2. I know I read it.
He actually, Secret Wars 2 invented Samuel L. Jackson's wig from Pulp Fiction years before. If you go back and look at your Secret Wars 2, he had the same do. He's got the Jules Winfield going on.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's a BS story about how, they sent some intern out to buy an Afro wig for Jules Winfield. Didn't understand it wasn't a Jerry Curl Afro they were wanting. It was like the big old, Shaft era Afro. That's bullshit. What Tarantino, who loved comics, specifically said is, I want to look like the Beyonder. And the kid said, what the hell does that even mean?
You're right.
And luckily, Jim Shooter was on the set that day. And he explained,
well, who do you think that Tarantino bought his Coke from at the time?
See, unless that was
yeah,
he was actually the Gimp.
You know what I was really hoping for in Guardians of the Galaxy?
The Gimp?
First of all, yes, the Gimp. second of all was, you know, you're in the collector's room and he's explaining the Infinity Gem, whichever one it was, Fiesta Taco Infinity Gem, and behind him somewhere there would have just been
It was Funshine Gem.
It was Lay's Gem Wasabi Ginger Gem.
That's right. You voted for that one.
I did. I went online and voted for it. It was Boom Boom, if you remember Boom Boom. It says idea by, you know how it says on the bags?
Oh, yes.
It says idea by Boom Boom right there. So what was her name? Diane Proudstar.
Boom Boom was after my time.
How was Boom Boom after your time?
Because that was about the time I said enough is enough. Once they hit the Boom Boom era,
I'm drawing the line. But
the fact that on the X-Men cartoon they couldn't simply call her Jubilee, they had to call her Jubilation Lee.
I really was hoping that they would cut to a certain shot right over like Benicio del Toro's shoulder, and there would be just a styrofoam mannequin head with the Beyonder's wig on it. That would have been an amazing nod.
Just a wig block with no wig on it. They just caught him. He just finished putting his coiffure on.
Right, because I'm pretty sure that's what they have him wearing is the Beyonder's wig. It just they bleached it. That's all they did there. So what?
Actually, he was wearing the scalp of what's his name? Damn it!
You had it. Joke.
I had it right there, and then he got away. I keep wanting to say Michael York, but it wasn't. It was damn it. Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm McDowell.
In Heroes. They just sort of grew it out.
All right, so why does...
Everybody's starting to channel Heroes. Like, my God, yes, if you grew his hair out, he's Benicio del Toro.
Why are you considering Secret Wars 2 a super fail?
I consider Secret Wars 2 a super fail because Secret Wars 1 was a fail.
And the fact they went back to that well.
A sequel. The biggest problem I had with Secret Wars 2, I think, was, well, everything. But, okay, the Beyonder, I guess, it's like the Borg, you know, all of a sudden the Borg get a whiff of the Federation come calling.
Right.
Same sort of idea. The Beyonder cobbles together his Beyondo world, or held together by a Beyondo Bondo. And he, you know, has his little thing there and then sends everybody home with their own living or non-living accoutrements.
Right, whether it be the symbiote suit or Thor's. What did we decide? Thor's helmet was.
That's right. I think Thor's helmet actually died in childbirth.
Oh,
that's why it never came to light. Yeah, it's a little dark, but
it's a little dark. It is a little dark. I'm gonna give you.
It's a little dark. That's why when he got home, he immediately had whoever the Norse version of Hephaestus is, or maybe he just went and asked, you know, phone Hercules up. Can you get that that blacksmith, that smithy guy to make me a new helmet? Because this one's getting a little gamey.
It got darker. How did it get this going bad?
I don't know. You thought that was as dark as it gets.
Wow, you're in a place tonight. I don't.
I am in a place.
Because you know what's the most exciting thing you can do in a comic book, right? It's take a giant cosmic super being, like just the one of the most powerful beings in the universe, and spend a couple issues explaining what it's like to eat and go to the bathroom. There's nothing failure about that, right? Because that's what they did for the first couple issues of this. They did
a little bit more intimate exploration of the human condition than, say, Howard the Duck ever bothered with.
By the way, it is written by Jim Shooter, just so you know. Just so everybody remembers that.
Yeah, that's why he was selling Coke later to, when, you know.
Because if I remember right, this whole thing was like...
His Defiant wasn't working out for him.
This whole
what?
Thing... Oh, that's rough. this whole book was like an exploration of the human condition through the eyes of a cosmic character, right?
Yeah, like, it was sort of like, you know, when Q became human, to go back to Star Trek, except with less compelling.
Right.
Because you didn't care. And then at its best, it was it was obviously Jim Shooter dropping his balls on the, you know, I'm editor in chief and this is going to happen.
So I got this great idea. What if it's like, yeah. What if you can, you know, you're this omnipotent all-seeing being and you're forced to live like a human. What would that be like? I got a parrot. Shut up. What?
The thing that is, as editor in chief, and I realize in due deference to Jim Shooter's career, he was like in the junior bullpen at DC at like nine. He was like writing Legion of Superheroes at 9.5. Years later, he was founding things like various. After he left, after Marvel finally gave him the boot, he was founded various independent startups that failed. But
right
at nine, because effectively he just never grew up. So he's like this kind of guy who really wants to go and talk to George Perez and pitch this idea that nobody cares about.
Yes.
Except that he has the power to publish it. He farts and it happens. And that's really what that was. It was like this, like you nailed it there. And, you know, it's worse. The people, the others who were forced to play along, that is everybody at Marvel, who were forced to do a one-issue Beyonder story.
Right.
Effectively, what do you do when you're, you know, you're forced to do something you don't want to do, but there's no other choice? You simply don't do it or you don't do it well. And I hope that that's what was behind things like the Power Man and Iron Fist vacation issue, where the entire plot was asked to take a vacation so that Beyonder could show up and get curious about the fact that, I guess up to this point, he'd only seen all the white people.
Though his hair would say otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Apart from him channeling the Thriller video. he goes into this like soul food place where Power Man and Iron Fist are having their lunch, completely unbothered by anybody. You know, like Reed Richards goes to KFC and he's mobbed. They can go in here and they're like, oh yeah, hey Power Man, hey Iron Fist. it's no big deal. You know, down in Harlem, who cares? They're here all the time. And he shows up and he notices these couple of black fellas looking at him, so he turns himself into a black person.
And
the
really?
One guy's reaction is, that guy's dissing us. Okay, the guy just spontaneously changed races. I mean, okay, I'll give you Power Man and Iron Fist eat at the same place, at the same lunch counter you do every day, and they get the same shrimp and grits or whatever. But, I mean, come on. And I'll go on the record, shrimp and grits is a damn fine dish, what do you say so my damn self?
That's right.
But I mean, if somebody spontaneously changed in front of me, I think either that is the freakiest ass thing in the world, or it was like David Blaine doing some trick to make people run away watching his street magic.
Oh, my God.
It was just like, okay, I felt so bad for these people who had to write that story. Because and that's right up there with Roger Stern's Jettison story about Bucky being a limbless convalescent in a veteran's home.
To you, that's a fail. That's a big fail for you, isn't it?
It is. And thankfully, it never happened, except that it did later under someone else's watch. And instead of him being a convalescing for the last 60 years in a veteran's hospital, he became Winter Soldier.
That's right. A much better story, if
yes, indeed.
If you must know. But yes, in the seminal, I believe it's issue 2 of Secret Wars, Peter Parker has to explain to the Beyonder how to use the restroom. So if you have to explain in your book how to take a shit, chances are your book's shit. That's all I'm saying.
It was just sort of a cautionary tale at that point. Yeah, but also that and that's actually become one of the things people, when they go to Half Price Books, if they're out, sold out of the toilet training books, they'll buy that issue.
See,
it's turned out to be a go-to, the big boy potty book or that second issue of Secret Wars too.
See, for me, there's one that's a particular concept, okay, that is a super fail for me, and there it does stem back to one book, and I can tell you exactly which book it is, okay, and we've talked about this at length on the show as well. There, in 1994, Ron Mars, wrote a book, and it was Green Lantern 54. And in Green Lantern 54, somebody to get back at new Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner, Major Force shoves his girlfriend into a refrigerator, kills her, and shoves her into a refrigerator, thus bringing about the term refrigerator girlfriend or women in refrigerators.
The hashtag.
Right. So it's where you take a female comic book character and use it at, and use the injury, death, or dismemberment of said comic book character to forward a plot line because you're kind of out of ideas, I guess. So for me, that was a big one, and we've talked about that quite a bit over time as a kind of a trope for the representation of female characters in comic books, as well as horrible, horrible writing decisions if you just need to move the plot
absolutely,
forward.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you want to pull a seven, I guess that's the
What's in the box?
What are you saying? What's in the box?
What's in the box? Every time I do that, time I try to do my Brad Pitt "What's in the box" impression, it just comes out as Jerry Seinfeld asking, "What's in the box?"
What's in the box?
That's in the box, Kramer. Kramer, what's in the box?
What's in the box?
For me, Newman, that's a big one.
What's in the box? What's in the box,
Newman? Kramer, what's in the box, Kramer? For me, that's a big one.
Do you even have lights in this building? Anyway.
These pretzels are making me thirsty. Serenity now. So for me, that's a big fail, and it's kind of carried through. It's gotten better recently just because of in the last 15 years now since that came out. There's been a fairly big backlash in the industry, which we've covered pretty ad nauseum here, and we probably won't stop covering it as far as the treatment of female comic book characters. So at least that's getting better. If anything, we hope that these failures that we've seen that we're going to be discussing over the next 4.5 issues of Hey Kids Comics have led to some kind of introspection and change in the popular paradigm.
Absolutely. Well, I'll give you an example of female character deaths, girlfriend / wife / significant other deaths in comics, is you have the Major Force refrigerator thing going on as that's your what Siskel and Ebert used to call video nasties. That's the bad end of things,
right?
And then if you work your way up the scale, I think as meaningful plot moving significant other deaths go,
right,
I would have to say Sue Dibney. It's still tragic, but it, in a sense, served a purpose in a better way. It wasn't simply just to win the box.
It did, but there's a lot of people that still say that was a failure. If we're going to look at that side, I know you and I agree that we find that the Identity Crisis to be an excellent read. We like it, but there are a lot of people that claim it as a failure for the same reason, because they use it represents the darkening of comic books and the representation of the way that women are treated in comics. I don't necessarily agree with that stance because of exactly what you were just saying. There's a difference between a girlfriend in a refrigerator and an actual plot device, that is being used to tell a particular story, in my opinion. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Absolutely. so heavily.
No,
but
quite all right. That's a good point, though, because we should not, whenever possible, we should not limit it solely to our own personal opinions, even though they're more valid to us.
So tell me...
Well, I'll tell you a personal super fail.
Okay.
Because it failed on a couple levels. One, there's the enduring bitterness that was followed by yet another kind of enduring bitterness.
Okay.
Odd to say this. Basically, what I'm getting at is roll back the clock about 25 or 30 years.
Here we go.
With the much anticipated Brian Boland illustrated, couldn't tell you who the hell wrote it, Camelot 3000.
Oh, God, here we go.
Yeah, which, you know, if you've listened to past issues of this show, you know the thing came out like clockwork 11 months in a row. And then the seminal, the long-awaited final issue, the 12th month, had arrived. And passed. 13 months arrived and passed. 23 months followed and disappeared into obscurity. And on the 24th month, DC... Oh, okay. Yeah, we found laying around. And the reason that it was a super fail, not solely because of that.
Yeah.
The biggest problem was, in addition to having to go back to your back issue bins, to your boxes, and dig this up, and reread an entire year's worth, just so you would remember what the hell was going on last year... or nearly 2 years ago when you started reading this.
Right.
Then what you got was 11 months or 12 months of waiting to discover, apparently you aren't the only one who forgot what was
we're
in
doing?
That book in the ensuing 11 months that started it. Because the 12th issue was to me, and I'm apologies to anybody who thinks I'm dead wrong on this, but... for me personally, this was like Kill Bill and Kill Bill 2.
Here we go. We're
issues
attacking Tarantino tonight.
Issues 1 one show or one movie, and issue 12 was a whole other movie.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I got to ask this question anyway, right?
All right.
Because I need to know the answer to this question. Was Camelot 3000 good anyway? Like, did you wait?
I have not... bothered to look at it as the person I am today. In high school, it was good because it was new, it was different, it was unlike anything out there.
Right.
And the core concept was that England of, you know, year 6000, whatever, super future lightsaber wielding England, you know, laser gun wielding bobbies, or maybe they had laser truncheons, I don't remember. It is England. But basically, you know, this is the far-flung future, and the long-promised return of King Arthur is the crux of the show.
Okay.
Of the story. Apparently, legend has it, and I don't know if this is an actual legend or one that exists solely in Camelot 3000, but legend has it that King Arthur would one day return when England faced her greatest challenge or her greatest danger.
Right.
That King Arthur prophecy. Just sort of spontaneously reiterate himself out
just,
of the,
yes, insinuate himself back into life.
Into reality, yes. And much like the return of Superman, only much longer, a full 12 months longer.
You're so angry about it still. And that's my thing. Yes.
Yeah, I remember when Steve and I were reading this, though, he was complaining about, well, I guess World War II just wasn't good enough for old Artie.
Right, right. Like, I don't know where you've been, man.
Yeah, he was holding out for the alien invasion or whatever the hell the story was.
And there are a lot of books now that you go back and you read, right? That you realize that you thought were great, but in actuality, they were pretty big fails.
They sucked.
Marvel X. Do you remember Marvel X?
I've heard of it, but I probably avoided it like so many other things.
It's basically Marvel went, oh shit, Kingdom Comes out, we've got to do something.
Yes, it was the Alex Ross driven... cluster fudge of
the Alex Ross Kurosawa dead man walking playing both sides of the fence against each other.
Oh yeah, because it had characters
future
like
alternate timeline thing that was happening.
Spider's Man.
Yes. Yeah. Oh.
Like if the lizard spontaneously had red skin that looked kind of spider web patterny in its scales. Yeah. And it was covered with living spiders, centipedes, those big, hideous cave crickets from New Zealand, and stuff like that. Yeah, and then there was like a daredevil who was apparently a devil. Iron Man 2099, Mark 2099. And yes, Marvel X. Yes, and none of it meant anything.
No, none of it meant a thing.
I mean, it was like, what's that Shakespearean line, about sound and fury?
Yeah, it was definitely sound and fury signifying nothing.
It's like whatever the analog in
Earth X. It was called Earth X.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Earth X. That's right.
Earth X.
Now, what? One of the worst fails, which I remember seeing covers for it and thinking, this is so terrible. I don't want anything. I don't want anyone to acknowledge it exists, and now I'm forced to. Which Marvel, when you called it Marvel X, that reminded me of Marville.
No. Okay, go on.
I know precious little about Marville, other than it was 9 out of 10 covers were Greg Horn cheesecake to the point of, even GQ wouldn't run those covers.
See, and this angers me about Greg Horn, and we'll get into this. We actually we have an issue coming up of this. Speaking of, while we're talking about it, what are our issues in this arc? Because we haven't even talked. We just went for it with Secret Wars 2.
I jumped right in. Next week, we will be. This is one I'm really excited about in Challenge of the Super Fails, is Dial Z for Zero, where we talk about the absolute worst characters ever created.
Right.
That is followed by Defective Comics, where we talk about just god-awful bad comics, especially the parody glut. And, we talked a bit about the parody glut during the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episode.
Right, but there are... That's the tip of the iceberg, man.
Yeah, it's really the... There were some good things that came out of the parody glut, but very few.
Oh, I'm reading the Earth-X by... synopsis, because it'd been so long since I read it. Oh, it's bad. So what's the last issue?
Let's see,
was that issue 3?
I've lost track now, because I always these 5-issue arcs, I can always remember 4 out of 5 every time.
Right.
And then I get stuck on the 6th one, and I'm trying to remember what the name of the stupid thing was. However, I do have at my disposal a list of... I do know what the final issue is. It's Toy No Fair, where we talk about... we're going to return to the Isle of Misfit Toys, but we're also going to talk about the worst toy-related comic licenses.
Nice. And, nice. In this one, I forgot...
too heavily into a
did, what was his name? It was... In Kingdom Come, the preacher was named Norman
McKay,
right? Like he's a character that they used as a paragon of kind of like a this is your life scenario, right? I mean, that's sort of why he was there. The specter came to him and was showing him this dystopian future. Right.
Oh, and I'm so sorry. I missed an issue. There is the middle issue, the third issue of this arc. We go from Dial Z for Zero. Sorry to interrupt there. Journey into Misery.
Right.
Where we talk about the worst artists, worst writers.
And that's the one I was going to refer to, because I do want to talk I want to talk about Greg Horn in that, because there's a lot of Greg Horn stuff that I really like.
Yes.
And then there's this. You know, and whether it's an editorial mandate or an experimental phase, as we like to say, so I was talking about Norman McKay, right?
Norman McKay.
And that was his job. I mean, that you were seeing the world through his eyes. You were seeing a possible dystopian future through the Norman McKay character, as led by the Spectre. In Earth X, it was Machine Man. Do you remember that? They used Machine Man as the, and it's just jacked up. Like anything that they could throw at you, they threw everything that they possibly could into Earth X. Like it's ridiculous. Like,
oh yes,
it's horrible.
It's so funny because they also tried to market the hell out of it.
Uh-huh.
Somebody made a little mini bus, because and people were whining about, nah, Thor is a woman. Well, Thor was a woman in Earth X, so suck it.
It's just right. Everything was ridiculous in Earth X. Don't you want everything to go Earth X? Keep bitching, and everything will become Earth X. Do you really want everything to become Earth X?
Like Peter Parker was a cop,
right?
Because apparently the best qualifications in that dystopian future to join the police force were to have been a journalist, a photojournalist.
Listen, they'll take what they could get. They'll take what they could get when everyone becomes a mutant, apparently.
That reminds me of another super fail, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Go for it. I'm done with this. I can't even look at it anymore. It hurts my heart.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, wasn't Wolverine in this? It's like, you know, some, like, he was down to one claw or some crap.
I don't remember.
There was something about Wolverine, I think. You know, you got to have Wolverine in damn near everything.
Right.
And, in fact, I think if you wanted to have a book that was going to sell, how about a book with no fucking Wolverine?
Right.
See how that...
Well, they're doing this whole Death of Wolverine thing where they're talking... Right now in comics where they're talking about killing Wolverine. I'm expecting the entire... global economic system to collapse under the weight of that.
Wow, that's going to be like, what was it? It's like Metalocalypse all of a sudden. People will just be hurling themselves off of rooftops because they don't want to live in a world without Wolverine. But yeah, another big super fail for me, because it was just so heavily hyped. It was a concept that I was dubious about anyway.
Yeah.
Was House of M.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I needed to go no further than the first issue, because that's as far as I could get because of all the vomit in the back of my throat. It just became unbearable. But it was one of these things where the artwork was good, but often exaggerated.
Yes.
In much the same way that late in his career, Michael Golden, who I loved, actually even all over his career, he had this tendency to occasionally go from really good, solid artwork to, like, doing exaggerated, like, you know, 1820s political cartoon expressions on characters, you know, where their mouths became enormous and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, that's not, no. And this was one where it was the first time I encountered physically, I guess you'd say, but I'd heard tell of it, I think, beforehand.
What's that?
The concept that Namor was the first mutant.
Yes.
Which is, as Holding Water goes, it is the most Civ-like of concepts that I can imagine. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't he like half human, half Atlantean?
Yeah.
So, is he technically a mutant?
No.
Because to be a mutant, I think, you know, physiologically, you have to have been born human and then have the X gene.
Right.
Now, arguably, does the half that's human have an X gene? That could be it, but it was just a stupid concept. And if you were going to cast about for a quote-unquote first mutant, make it some dumbass Western character or World War II character nobody gave two shits about, and, you know, punch up their history. Like, you know, that's why they were so good.
Right.
You know, I can't think of any World War II era. Okay, let's for sake of argument, let's say Dum Dum Duggan was a mutant.
Thank you. That's where exactly
and
where
that's
my brain
why
was.
He was such a dead shot. You know, that's why he was.
He wasn't a super. He was like an Omega level mutant, but he had something going on.
Yeah, I mean, he had something, but you know, it wasn't obvious. He didn't like couldn't bamf or you know shoot.
He healed pretty quick, like quicker than everybody else. He was a little tougher, a little faster.
Too busy fighting Nazis to notice.
Right. He's a little tougher, a little faster, and he never missed.
Yeah, that would have been cool. But, to, you know, oh, well, he must be the first mutant because he's got wings on his feet. Shut up! And to make it worse, to just drive that nail into my skull, they had to have this stupid class where little kids were being, well, class, since we're all mutants, who was the first mutant? And girl, like, it was Namor of Atlantis. My mom had a crush on him. Like, oh, shut up. Okay, that's it. I am done with this thing. That and the fact that there was a scene where like these bizarre looking kids, and this was a case where the art style, also when the little girl was talking about her mom, she, the giant, like you could drive a truck into her mouth. Maybe that was her mutant power. I don't know.
Right. It's called the Big Mouth.
Yeah, large mouth. Kids playing on the street. And like in the background, you see some woman in a business suit clutching her briefcase as she's flying away from the scene. I'm like, okay, if you can fly, possibly do other shit, what are you doing in work in a damn office? I mean, what is the economy in the mutant world? It doesn't become business as usual, but everybody can piss fire. That doesn't hold, you know, again, sieve-like buckets here. But they're apparently the only non-mutant in the entire world lives on these kids' block. And it's Captain America.
Well, of course it is.
As they call him, the old dude.
Right, right. You have a lot of problems with this, don't you? Speaking of mutants and bad fails... should we talk about Onslaught at all? That was perfect. That was perfect.
That was like a sucker punch. Wow.
The Zeta powered.
I did not see that coming.
Zeta powered mutant team up of Professor X and Magneto that somehow makes an unstoppable mutant force that reset reality. And in resetting reality, I don't know if you know this, but all you have to do to reset reality is sell your flagship books to independent artists and authors so that they can relaunch your entire universe.
Okay.
Awfully. In an awful, awful way.
Yeah, it's sort of like, to take it to the other side of the street, Just Imagine.
No, see, remember when I was telling you there was something that Lacey wanted me to talk about? She's become enamored with Just Imagine.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, she's become...
So is this like, to go back to Jules Winfield, it's like, well, my girlfriend likes Just Imagine, so I have to like Just Imagine.
No, I don't mean likes it. Okay. It's trying to figure out, she likes it the way that... oncologists try to figure out how to get rid of cancer. Like, she's invested in its destruction and trying to figure out why it exists. And maybe through understanding why it exists, she can find a way to defeat it once and for all.
That's a good approach to defeating things like that.
Because I had to explain to her what it was. And because she's like, what is this? And then I had to explain to her, and she's like, what? What happened now? It was so good.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think it was just an excuse so they could call it GIST. I can't remember the ST. Just Imagine some shitty take.
So before we're done here, and we've got about 15 minutes left before we wrap it up.
Come on it. I hate that.
I want you to touch on a something and give me a little history on something that I'm not too vested in, okay? But I know I consider it a failure in what I've picked up and read a little bit of. So how did and why is it a failure that that the new universe exists in our lifetime?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was in the days, the ghastly days of yesteryear, when we did not have the benefit of the internet.
Right.
Hype was a tough thing to make happen. And the way you made hype is that you would just like promote the hell out of stuff, build it up in your own self-aggrandizing, self-advertising rags, like Marvel Age in the case of Marvel. And then you would like get in the fanboy press, what little of it there was out there at the time, and you'd build up the idea, and also in your own books, and you would sell. It's you see, now I've got Malcolm McDowell in my mind. You see, it's like Ian Malcolm. There's like selling it. The concept was of the new universe was, despite what we occasionally say in the Marvel Comics books, the Marvel Comics universe is not actually the real world. Even though we spent a whole month where, you know, the characters were answering the letters columns, ruining it for people who finally got their letters published.
Right. What was your Wolverine fail?
Oh yeah, this does bring up the epic fail of a Wolverine answering a fan letter. I love how realistic the stories are and how real world everything is. The response was, "Hate to disillusion you, bub. We are real." Or if you want to take the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends approach, "I hate to disillusion you, bub. We are real.
We are real."
In which case, which apparently Canadians sound like Australians.
Right? Did you know that?
I had no prior awareness of that. So the new universe was touted as taking place in the real world, in your universe. So conceptually, the idea was probably these would be what superheroes would be like in the real world. I'm going to avoid the most obvious point where I say, you know, the absolute best appraisal of what superheroes will be like in the real world, and instead say perhaps check out Astro City.
Right.
Which has a decent appraisal of how that would dynamic would work. The problem was it was just some of the absolute worst concepts that were being sold, not even wholesale, at full retail, at market value. And I bought most of the first issues.
Oh.
And I bought none of the second issues. Some of the titles were like DP7.
Right.
Which apparently stood for Displaced Paranormals. And they were like these seven paranormals who were displaced. basically, you know, like they were like normal people who got superpowers.
Because, you know, superpowers. Something called the White Event happened, apparently, and created...
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently not the same as the Great White Event from the play The Skin of Our Teeth, but you get the idea.
Also not like the band Great White, who had their own event that shall remain nameless right now.
That's so true. Those were the days. You had, what was it, the one with the kids from MIT who built their own robot.
Not Spitfire. Was it Spitfire?
I think it was something like Spitfire or Fire Spit. And then you had, there was literally only one title that survived. It was almost like, speaking of super fails, very obscure here. Dark Horse Comics' Comics Greatest World.
Wow.
Yes, Dark Horse heady on the fumes of their success from licensed properties and creator-owned properties like Hellboy and the Mask, decided to launch their own series of superhero books. And much like the New Universe, they overdid it. They flooded the market with things like Hero Zero. What were some of the others?
I do remember that.
They're so forgetful. Division 7 or something like that. And the only one... Actually, they had two that survived. Were Ghost, which was the only one that was readable.
Right.
And Barbed Wire, which inspired a Baywatch spinoff.
Nice.
But the New Universe was literally the precursor to that. So, you know, if you had lived through the New Universe, you're kind of thinking when Comics Greatest World came out, it's like, be careful what you call greatest Comics Greatest World, because Heartbreaker probably isn't going to...
what I really like about New Universe is that they... Jim Shooter asked himself, what's everybody else doing well, and then decided to do that in the worst way possible.
Exactly. I think maybe it was just in response to Wolverine's determination that the Marvel Universe was the real world.
Well, like for instance, I'm gonna throw some titles at you. All right, let's do some word association here. Kickers Inc.
Okay, Kickers Inc. The best part of Kickers Inc. was the background in some humorous comic where there was a comic shop and on its rack was S Kickers. Brilliant. I loved it. That was the best parody since in Normal Man, the Tight Teens. Yes, Kickers Inc. was a, where they were like football players with superpowers.
Yes. They were football players that formed a superhero for hire group.
Wow. They had to huddle before they, you know.
Fought. Right? Was there a playbook? Like, exactly. There were so many jokes that could have been.
There was one issue where they're trying to recover their playbook from the opponent. Because that's the, you know, when you're with Kickers Inc.
Do you remember Psi-Force? Psi-Force was the longest running, was one of the longest running New Universe titles. It was about 3 years. Where they were the Voltron of superheroes.
Wow, yeah. Oh, that's right, because they would all combine to become a super being or something.
Right, it was the Psy-Hawk.
Yeah, you wanted to replace PSI, the, you know, for psychokinetic,
right,
or psionic, with SIGH, because it's just
Psi-Force. Remember that from the Muggerville universe.
Yeah, there's a new book, Uncle Psi-Force.
Uncle Psi.
From Duck Dynasty Comics.
Oh, God.
Where everyone's just...
They all combine into racism, so that's great.
Yeah, that's right. Race-Hawk.
Race-Hawk.
With this giant beard that is like Medusa from The Inhumans. How about Mark Hazard? And I honestly had never encountered the word before. Was, you know, Mark Hazard Merc?
Yeah,
we were arguing at the time because we had not heard that, you know, articulated out loud before. Was it Mark Hazard Merce?
He's a mercenary.
He's not a mercenary,
right?
A mercenary is a bird with a fish's tail.
Let me give you.
I'm gonna let that sink in.
I like it. Let me give you the proper pronunciation of this word. So it's not merce, I don't think.
No,
I don't think it's merc. I think if you want
Deadpool is the merce with a mouth, and
yeah. If I'm looking at this phonetically, I think it's Mark Hazard Punisher. I might be wrong in the way that...
Right, that's it, exactly. It was Punisher for Hire, basically.
It basically was Punisher for Hire, yes.
If you've got the money and you don't know, you can't contact, you can't find the Punisher, perhaps you can hire Mark Hazard Punisher for Hire. Da, da, da,
da, da, da, da. So, yes, all right, Cole, we've got to wrap it up.
What about Justice?
Justice.
Which was spelled in the classic Roman, so a lot of people thought it was Justice. Or Javistus.
Javistus.
They thought it was probably like, you know, a spinoff from Kickers Incorporated where it was Junior Varsity.
It's their Teen Titans. It's,
it's the JV.
Join us for our new series, Not Whole. We're a group of 12-year-old boys that play baseball.
It's the T-ball of superheroics.
All right. I'm pulling the plug.
There are so many places we could go.
And we've got four more issues to do it.
Dr. Seussian in nature.
Here. We've got four more issues to do it. So this was just your warm-up. This was your teaser. This was your aperitif, if you will.
This was your mercenary.
we sent the mercenary into the mine, a waterlogged mine.
For underwater mining. It turns out they universally drown.
Cole. I think we found our fifth member of the Muggerville 7.
All right.
The Mercenary.
The Mercenary. Right. It's sort of like a combination of Angel and Aquaman.
Well, the issue is that Muggerville's landlocked. And,
no,
that's and you have a special set of mechanical wings that allows you to fly, but you have the mutant ability to breathe underwater. But there's no water to breathe under, and your wings got stolen by a mugger. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, just occasionally you put your head in a bathtub and just relax.
I'm thinking here.
I'm not Mr. I. I've got to put my head in a bucket.
I'm thinking. Oh, it's the saddest superhero. So why don't you do some plugs?
We are, of course, coming to you, as always, through the auspices of the Jedi Cole universe. Wait, that's me, Jedi Cole!
Hey!
And, wow, worst name I ever heard. We, at the JediCole.com, of course, as aforementioned, you can contact us at jcumail@yahoo.com. And remember, do write us about you're being tricked by first issues.
Oh yeah,
to win your copy of Web of Spider-Man.
Which, by the way, I saw an issue of Web of Spider-Man number one today at a comic shop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nostalgia.
I would have bought you one if you didn't already have 30.
If I didn't have 7 or 20, or 4 and 20. They're like blackbirds. They just not in a pie. We have, of course, you can check out the tweets on Twitter from time to time at the Jedi Cole U.
Right.
And you can find us on Facebook under Jedi Cole Universe, under Hey Kids Comics, the one that has the Bobby Blakey images of Andrew and myself, not any of the other Hey Kids Comics out there.
That's
and
right.
Occasionally you can find myself, Andrew, Mrs. Jedi Cole, and Rick Gutierrez over at United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesOfGeekdom.com.
That's absolutely
and,
right.
Oh, and also, in addition to appearing as a pre-recorded show on the Jedi Cole Universe every other Sunday, on the other Sundays, the other every other Sundays, you can find myself and Eddie Medina on the Rancor Pit live at deepelemonair.com every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Central.
Absolutely.
For more fun with your favorite Star Wars guys.
There you go. So next week we have, which issue is next week?
We have the Challenge of the Super Fails returns. Challenge of the Super Fails. Dial Z for Zero.
Oh, yeah.
That one is chock a block.
Just, I don't even know. Like, the problem with these, this story arc is narrowing it down to what we actually want. Because every bit of research I did for tonight's issue, we didn't touch any of it. Because we got on a roll, and
there is a Mobius strip of characters I want to talk about.
Never-ending cornucopia. All right, so buy, collect, and enjoy your comics, especially the bad ones. Please, the bad ones, because the bad ones are the best ones. So all that being said, until next week, say goodnight, Cole, and good night, and we'll join you for more failure in 1 week.
Good night, everybody.